What if you can do the kind of dentistry that you want to do? You can see the kind of patients that you want to see, and you do the type of treatment that you want to do in an office that you love with a team that you enjoy working with. To Dr. Paul Henny, all of this is intentional and purposeful, and it will help you get more joy out of dentistry. Welcome to Bite Size Dental Marketing. Today, we are talking to someone special, Dr. Paul Henny, a dentist with over 30 years of experience and a deep focus on relationship-driven care and behavioral dentistry. He's worked with thousands of practices, blending clinical expertise and behavioral dentistry to create a patient-centered environment where all those involved love the dentistry that's being done. In this episode, Dr. Henny shares how everything is part of the patient journey, from the marketing that you're doing to the team and how they interact with the patients, and how this impacts long-term trust and treatment acceptance. Enjoy. I would love for you to just start by telling us your story of how you got into this and what led you down this path. And thank you again so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I am the son of a dentist and several dentists in my family, including my brother and my uncle and my father. And as a result, I kind of went to dental school. It was sort of an idealized version of what dentistry was. So dental school, as everybody knows, is pretty reductionistic, and patients are there usually at the dental school for treatment for financial reasons. And it's not a very good example of real world, what happens in the real world of dentistry. So when I got out of dental school and got into associate positions and so forth, I was immediately impacted by the struggle in the area of communication and how difficult it was to get people to proceed towards proper care after I've diagnosed things and recommended things. And I struggled with that for a few years. I was concurrently teaching at the University of Kentucky Dental School as well, and I was enjoying teaching, but my private practice experience was not all that fun. It's not fun, as everybody knows, it's not fun to work with people who really don't want to be there or really don't want to take your recommendations in full or seriously. And so it's kind of a struggle. It's a battle of wills. And I didn't really enjoy that. I really thought that with my training and professional degree and whatnot, that people would treat me more maybe like a physician would be treated. They would just, you know, take your diagnosis and take your recommendations. But there's a lot more psychology involved in dentistry, as I learned very quickly. And it was reaching a point where I almost was very seriously thinking about leaving dentistry. I'd gotten involved in a side business. I'd opened up a gourmet kitchen shop with a financial partner, and we were having a lot of success with it and having a lot of fun. And I seriously was thinking about leaving dentistry. Fortunately, at that time, I ran into somebody that had trained at the Pankey Institute, which is a postgraduate training program here in the States. That teaches restorative dentistry as well as what I would call behavioral dentistry. And I was able to see a restorative practice of a dentist who is doing basically full mouth rehabilitations, aesthetic dentistry, very advanced things, and had a waiting room of patients who wanted to be there. It was all fee for service. There was no insurance involved with it. And it was a complete paradigm buster for me. I was exposed to dentistry being practiced in a way that I didn't even know existed. And I went on to meet some other people, a very advanced level orthodontist, pedodontist, who is doing maxillofacial development in young children and teens to help their midface grow and avoid breathing problems later and extensive braces later. So all these things happened to me in the mid to late 1980s, and it put the thought in my mind that I could actually practice dentistry in a different way, work with patients in a more relationship-driven way, work with people in a more comprehensive way, and in a more health-centered way. So that put me on the trail of a lot of studies at the Pankey Institute and many other places as well to develop my clinical skill set to be able to function in that world. I certainly didn't exit dental school with that skill set. So the common barrier that dentists will be confronted with roughly about that time after they've gone to advanced education programs, and that would be like Spear here or COIS here or Pankey Institute here or other places, is that their skill set rises up, but their patient acceptance rate of what they want to do does not follow that up. So it leads to another level of frustration. They see more, they can do more, but the patients are not accepting what the dentist want to do for them. So they're kind of back to where they were again, the same frustration. And that's where developing the kind of what I would call behavioral dentistry comes into play, understanding how to work with people in more effective ways, how to establish what I would call collaborative relationships with patients, goal-oriented relationships with patients, so that they're not doing it for me because I think it's what they need to do. They're doing it for themselves. We've got to be clear about who it is we're even trying to market to in the beginning before we can build this strategy that begins with marketing and ends with congruent experiences over and over and over again, where their first impression is confirmed. They come in, it's confirmed again. They feel heard, they feel listened to, they are offered the opportunity to participate. They engage in that. They enjoy that. We do some work together that's successful, on and on and on. So it's a chain of events that supports a deeper relationship that builds deeper trust and then allows them to make more sophisticated decisions in the area of dentistry.
Dentists that are just graduating and starting or building a practice, people that have had their own practice for long, people that are even thinking of being a dentist, how should they think about this is what dental school is going to teach you, but this is what Dr. Haney wants you to understand once you go into the real world?
Well, I would say, you know, dental schools, and I don't think it matters where it is in this world, dental schools don't have enough time to really help you learn very much about the behavioral side of dentistry. That's why I wrote my book, to help people become more aware of that piece of the equation. Your father practiced dentistry at a different time. It was much more slowed down. There was a lot less technology. There was a lot less, the overhead was a lot lower. There was a lot less need to scale things up to be profitable and so forth. So, you know, he just understand from one human being to another, he understood what it takes to be effective with people. That's really not being taught in dental school. What's being taught in dental school is all the digital advancements, how to build a bigger practice, see more people, how to down delegate. So the end result of all of that is less and less contact with the doctor and the patient, just like is happening in medical offices here in the States. The average medical doctor that works in a corporate environment, and that's the vast majority of them, is only allowed 7 minutes with the patient. Everything else is down delegated to a scribe or somebody else that's taking blood or whatever it is. So you know, brief moments with patients are not enough time to impart connection, trust, or much less any leadership role with regard to philosophy of care. So that's what's happening in dentistry. So we're at this very interesting paradoxical moment in dentistry. We know more about root cause and prevention than we ever have, but we don't have enough time to talk to people about that, right? So we can't execute on what we know, and we get stuck in this rut. And this is where dentists are so tremendously frustrated, is that they can't really execute a true preventive centered mission because there isn't time for it. And so the system itself tends to be unhealthy for both doctors and patients alike.
The doctors feel unfulfilled and the patients feel like they're on a conveyor belt. That's the mismatch that's happening, or at least from what I'm hearing. I know DSOs are having a big impact on this. I know there's a big fight for private dentistry and wanting to maintain the hour-long consult sessions where I get to know you and I understand you. But right now, Doc, it doesn't seem like that's where dentistry is going. It seems like as you said, the faster the better. Or do you disagree and you think maybe there is a community that wants to bring it back to the mission that you're on?
Well, I mean, the reality is that the market's been fragmenting for a long time. It's just going faster now. So this consolidation, corporatization, and now third-party money, third-party investment groups getting involved, that's kind of put it all on steroids. But there's always been a health-centered practice model within dentistry for the last 40 or more years for the dentists who understood it. And they were able to step outside of the insurance-centered, money-centered, procedure-centered philosophy and create something that's much more valuable that certain people want, like the patient that I described to you earlier. They seek it out. They're not getting their physical or emotional or health needs properly addressed at the locations they're going to, and they're frustrated. So they're getting on the internet, they're talking to their friends, they're looking for alternatives, and people that understand, dentists that understand this business model, can create a niche practice that's very, very successful and profitable. And they don't have to run around like a chicken with their head cut off all day and just collapse at the end of the day because they're physically and emotionally exhausted.
And do you think right now, is it the majority of dentists that you're coming in contact with, or even just the scope of what you've spoken about now, that they're getting it wrong? How many dentists are thinking about it in the way that you're saying? Cause to me, it makes so much sense. When I was researching Dr. Barclay's work, I know that you've written on extensively the three-phase adult education development, the process, all of that. I read it and I'm like, this makes perfect sense. Of course, this is how you need to present treatment. Of course, this is how you're going to convert that patient into a long life patient by understanding them, the psychology. Is it just that the money is in the back of the mind? Is it that there's not enough time? Like, what have you found are dentists and their teams struggling with in offices that they're not able to implement this, even if they've wanted to?
Well, in dentistry, the tail wags the dog for the most part. The insurance industry, you know, followed the money. And the vast majority of dentists are compensated through signing contracts with insurance plans, which compensate them really at levels that are insufficient to really cover their overhead and certainly to spend any quality time with people. So anytime that you sit down with a patient for an hour, that's going to be uncompensated to a large degree. So no matter how big of a heart the dentist has, they're only going to be able to do that for so long before they give it up. And they, you know, at the end of the day, they have to be profitable, be able to keep the doors open and take care of their family and appropriately pay for their staff and facility and all of that. So the way dentists are compensated for the most part is driving the business model that we see today. So it's a matter of chasing the money that's on the table and then trying to scale that up and industrialize it. And that's what I was referring to earlier about down delegation and minimizing doctor contact with people so that the only time the doctor's really with the patient is when they're doing physical procedures that they're getting paid for, probably in multiple rooms at the same time. And they're just hopping down the row and doing only things that a doctor can do, and everything else is down delegated to somebody else. And the patient may be sedated under nitrous oxide or something like that, so they didn't even know what's going on. It's not even a relationship at all, and they're not even in a conscious enough state to have an intelligent conversation about causes and effect and adjustments that can be made to avoid this the next time around or anything like that. So dentists are becoming just industrialized workers, highly skilled tradespeople that are plugged into a corporate machine the corporation doesn't really care whether you're there 5 years or not. There's somebody else that just came out of dental school that they'll plug in there. And the patients don't have a continuous relationship with any doctor. The staff is always turning over. And this is it's creating a lot of apprehension and unhappiness. And those situations are spinning out patients that are going, is there another alternative? This isn't working for me. I've got complicated problems that are not being addressed. And so that door is wide open. It has been for a long time, but it takes a bit of preparation to be able to be ready to receive that, to exploit that and take advantage of it and help people on a higher, more significant level.
I was going to say, especially on the high-end treatments, if we start looking at full arch cases, if we're looking at complete smile makeovers, these type of things, this is not a quick extraction. This is not a filling that I'm doing or a cleaning. I'm coming in there and I'm thinking with all of my emotions. I'm thinking with every cent that I have in my pocket, because I'm about to drop $30,000-$40,000 to spend on this, and it needs to be the right person. And this is a good segue, I guess, into, let's say I come to you and I say, Dr. Enny, I've listened to this podcast. I'm a dentist, and you're right. What you're saying makes perfect sense. I want to turn things around. I want to work against this corporate dentistry style, and I want to figure out a way to be able to sell this high treatment. When we go into the three-phase adult education process and all of that, can you share with our listeners that concept and what it means to you, and how that's a great step into really getting to a place where we are storytellers and we are tapping into the emotions and the psychology of our patients?
Well, it really comes down to individualizing the new patient experience for each person, beginning where they're at and what they believe about where they're at. And most people know very little about where they're at as far as dental health goes or the way things are trending. So most people come to us with a very low IQ, if you want to use the word, about where they are or where they're going to end up if they don't make significant changes. And so traditionally, dentists are taught to just bring them in, examine them, create a list of problems, and then delegate somebody on their team to give them the list, close the sale, if you will. And then they get frustrated that only, 40% of the people want to do the whole thing or want to argue about this or that, or only do what their insurance covers. And it's very backwards in terms of how people learn, how people make decisions, how the mind works, all that. In other words, in dental school, we are not taught how to make sophisticated sales in dentistry when you get involved in full mouth rehabilitations and things like that. My definition of beauty or attractiveness might be very different than yours or somebody else's, or why I feel a certain way about something is very important, because those are all motivators. Some people come in because their spouse, for instance, has been prompting them to do something about their smile when, in fact, and this is common with males, the female spouse might be pushing them to do something about the appearance of their teeth because they look horrible in photographs every time they go to a big black tie event or something. And the guy doesn't care. Males tend to be a lot more focused on function and longevity and things like that. I want to be able to eat what I want to eat. I just want to be able to keep my teeth my whole life, and I want to be able to eat what I want to eat. How they look, that's kind of down farther on the scale of importance to me, where with majority of women, how their teeth looks is a lot more important because they pay attention to everything. Every morning they're looking at their face in a magnified mirror, every detail. They know every detail about their appearance, on down to what they're wearing that day and how they smell that day. Men aren't in that space very much. So it's important to understand what their motivations are, what the thought is in their mind that's brought them to you that day. It might just be fear. It might be fear that they're going to lose their teeth. It might be that they have a friend that had their mouth restored and they are now want to do something similar to that. It's all kinds of possibilities, but you're never going to know until you develop a relationship that's open and honest with the person and that you're not bringing a lot of judgment into it. You're just having conversations with people about what their dental health future could look like. And then as things progress now, there are all kinds of oral systemic connections. We know now that taking care of the mouth, the health of the mouth affects the entire body. So there's a whole nother new lane that's opened up that creates a different kind of relationship or an expanded relationship with patients as well. But you've got to know each person on a deeper level so that you can work together as a team. If they've got complicated problems, that work has got to be done in a highly coordinated fashion. And it can't be centered around money on the front end. It's got to be centered around what, you know, what's their vision for an optimal outcome for them? And what kind of timetable is that on? So it's a matter of creating a unique experience for each person. So that's what three-phase adult education is. First, learning together. Co-discovery means learning with. So you learn, you structure your examination process in a way that you slow down and share the findings with the person at the time that you're examining them, and you can use intraoral cameras and other means to do that, photography. And then you just share that information with them and open up the conversation for questions and thoughts. And then you take a leadership role and share with them your thoughts about how things are trending and what you've seen happen in other people in that situation over time with and without treatment and how they feel about both of those possibilities. And if they show an indication towards maybe restoration versus repair, then you can show them examples of what that might look like. You can even have them call patients of yours that have done that to get an opinion of how they feel about it now.
You're the guide in the journey through it. Oh, they're the hero. Yeah.
Yes. So another way to think about it is the clinical findings are only relevant to the person if they're related to a goal that they have or not. You know, a cracked tooth is going to mean one, something different from one person to the other. The person that's absolutely dead set on keeping their teeth for the rest of their life is going to react to that finding a lot differently than a person that, they're kind of so-so about whether or not they want to keep their teeth. They see all these ads on TV about just having all their teeth taken out and having a hybrid prosthesis put in there. And they're thinking that, that's the way to go. Natural teeth are just a pain in the neck, and I don't want to do that anyways. Oftentimes what I will say to patients is, you know, it really doesn't matter what you decide to do. It doesn't affect me very much what you decide to do. But what I want you to do is whatever decision you make and whatever we decide to do together, I want you to be able to look back on it 10 years from now and say, I'm glad I did that. That was a good decision. That was one of the best decisions I've ever made. So I see myself in the beginning as kind of like a tour guide, as you said. And as being a tour guide, we're kind of building up trust and honesty in the relationship. And from there, once they show interest in making some corrections or improvement, then I can assume more of a, put on a different hat and assume more of a leadership role. And then at the end of the day, I am the executor of it. I am the carpenter, you know, so I'm the surveyor. I'm the architect. At the end of the day, I'm also the general contractor. And so I'm putting on different hacks as I proceed through the relationship as it evolves. And where dentists get in trouble is they proceed into the treatment aspect of the relationship too quickly, particularly if their situation is complicated. And they take the problems away from the person rather than allowing them to own it and struggle with it a little bit and participate in the solutions. Because dentistry has become very easy to do very, very fast now with milling machines and scanners and all of these things. It's become very easy to deliver care very, very quickly. You can take a problem away from a patient and give them to them and treat them in a very reductionistic way. They have learned nothing about it.
They'll end up back in your office in a couple of years with another tooth.
Yeah, their perspective of the problem has not matured at all.
Yeah.
That comes down to what's our purpose at the end of the day. Is our purpose just to make as much money as we can as fast as possible? Or do we have a higher purpose than that? Do we see our job as being educators and leaders and facilitating health?
I love that you're saying that. There's two things I want to come back to. The first is, it's okay if you want to make money as a dentist. Of course you do. It makes perfect sense. There's some people that's only in it for the money, and there's some people that just has a heart, and there's a subset of you're making a lot of money because you're doing a good job. And that, to me, I feel is more fulfilling in dentistry. If I look at my dad's journey over the last 3 decades, and from what you've shared with me too, is there not an argument to be made that if you approach dentistry in the way that you're saying now, and you really put that time in to make it better, that ultimately more money will come in than if you do this plug and play type of cheap dentistry and people just don't return? Like, pursuing the heart of dentistry and what it was meant to be, in my mind, ultimately will get you those big production cases. It will get people to trust you to come back, to bring their family, to bring their friends, which means that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy at the end of the day. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You can go for the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, that's covered on people's insurance and scale it up and try to do that as fast as possible and run around all day long until you're about ready to collapse at the end of the day. Or you can work with fewer people more effectively, bigger treatment plans, more production per hour, and work fewer days per week and make more money. Yes. It requires a different mindset, a different practice structure, a different approach to the way you come to know people and work with them over time. It requires a different marketing strategy, entirely different marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different way of thinking about dentistry. And the biggest problem that I have today is all the young dentists tend to, they're like lemmings. They want it. They see the same social media sites. They talk to each other. They all think the same. They don't even know there's another way to practice.
Mm.
And it was very much like my experience in the very beginning when I was about ready to quit. And had I not gone into that office, that was completely different experience for me on both the clinical and the emotional and the financial levels. Who knows, I might have left dentistry had I not had that moment where my eyes were open to dentistry could be very different and much more fulfilling on both the spiritual and the financial level. And I could slow down. I wouldn't have to be pressed for time with people. I could sit down and really get to know people and struggle with them. And sometimes the problems that they're having, somebody in their family is just diagnosed with cancer or this or that. Really know people on that level so that they become part of your family. So you can think of dentists, you can think of patients on a couple different levels. You can have just kind of a transactional relationship with them. I'll do this and you'll pay me that. Or you can have a relationship with them where they're really a member of your practice on the philosophical level. And the reason they're doing it isn't centered around money or coverage. It's centered around what they want and what they value. But if you don't know what that is, you can't play that game.
You were saying earlier, you then as a dentist need to play the carpenter, you're the architect, you're the person that puts it together at the end. But part of that is we need the builders, we need the cement to be manufactured, we need it to be painted at the end at all. You need that massive team around you. And that saying always of too many cooks in the kitchen, it spoils it. It makes it difficult. And I know for a fact that, as you said, with the practice you mentioned earlier, it almost felt like a bit of a circus. And I can promise you probably that dentist was trying to do their best, but they didn't have that team that understood what they understood. They didn't know how to run that practice. What is your experience in, doc, I heard what you said on the podcast, I'm trying to do it, but my team is not getting this. I don't understand when I get to the patient treatment coordinator, it's almost like there's a break in the link and then the front desk is not, and my marketing either is not. it seems like there's a mismatch. How do you tie this together in your experience to have that across the board?
Well, I mean, once you make the commitment to practice like this, it's a comprehensive change that needs to be made. If, for instance, last week, everybody was money centric. Everybody, you had production meetings every morning, 8 o'clock, and you wanted to produce X amount of dollars by the close of the day at 5, and you needed to find X amount of treatment and the patients that were coming in that day, and then that will lead us up to a weekly goal that leads us to a monthly goal that leads us to an annual goal. All of the business structures are designed to work for that and support that goal. Versus this week, you're saying, "All right, we're giving that up. Now we're health centered. We want to know our patients on a deeper level. We want to collaborate with them more effectively. We want to time treatment in such a way that they can afford it, so they'll do the right thing instead of the quick thing that's paid for by somebody else." Sometimes the employees that you have work really well for model one, but they are not a fit for model two. They are production workers, not deeply interpersonal people. There's some, and this includes hygienists and clinical staff and people that answer the phone. Some people are very relational. Some people are very empathetic. Some people are not. Some people are very rigid. They are really not interested in knowing the patient very well, but they're very productive in the first model. They get things done quickly. They're effective. They make their bonuses because of that. They're rewarded for it. You change your practice model. Sometimes you need to change your staff. Sometimes you need to change your website. Sometimes you need to change your facility so that it projects a different message. I have a number of friends that have been very successful in doing this practice model, and their practice, their facility, each one of them is unique. I have a friend who's a very, very good painter, and he's won a number of national awards, and he has his artwork all over the office. It's not pictures of smiles or teeth or anything like that. It's his artwork. And so people come into that space and they immediately connect the fact that this is a highly talented artist. And that's what I want. That's the kind of person I want working on my smile. Okay. I have another close friend of mine that I wrote about in the book that was very sophisticated in his understanding of art and sculpture and fabrics and all these things. And he developed a very low volume office that you would come into, and every aspect of it, everything was so well thought out and sophisticated because he was in a very tony upscale part of Washington, D.C., where people had a lot of money and they were very worldly and well-traveled. And every aspect of his office, the way he laid it out, was a signal to that person that Charlie was sophisticated too. And so the bottom line is to create a practice that's an accurate reflection of you, of who you are. It's authentic. If you were to come into my office, it would be a completely different iteration of that, but I've designed every bit of it, just like the space I'm in right now. So patients come in it, they love the office. It's more like a home. They immediately ask almost every time who designed it, and my team will tell them that I did. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's a good thing. They go, this person's pretty sophisticated. They understand aesthetics. They understand how to create quiet, comfortable environments. This is a very different experience for me. So there are all kinds of levels that you can get involved in terms of designing this type of practice. But it all starts with the emotional experience. You know, am I safe? Do I feel this is part of my tribe? You mentioned that work. Am I in tribe or out tribe? Does the mission and purpose of this practice align with what I want and who I am? Do I feel heard? Do I feel like I get a voice in the decision-making process? Am I being hurt or helped? All these things. And it builds from, like I said, the very first impression on. Every little touch point is a confirmation of their initial assumption, or it undermines it, and they become more cynical and skeptical.
How does that pattern pull through from you and what you've seen from that initial touch point of the marketing? And you said making as an architect your product of what you want people to understand. And how does that work all the way through until someone shakes your hand and says, "Doc, thank you so much for changing my life"?
Well, I think the best way to think about it is every decision that you make, whether it's the design of your office, how your office smells, where your office is located, what's the person's experience as they're parking their car and walking in the door. I've spent a number of years doing consulting work, going into practices and seeing things. And one of the patterns that I saw very quickly was most dentists get numb to what's going on around them because they're focused on the problem of the day or the problem of the moment. And me coming into an environment as a consultant, I'm seeing it fresh for the very first time. I'm seeing the weeds in the parking lot. I'm seeing the shrubs out front that aren't trimmed. I'm seeing the windows that haven't been cleaned in 3 years. I'm seeing the flies in the overhead lights. I'm smelling the smell that they can't smell anymore. I can hear, I'm sitting in the waiting room and I can hear the drills or whatever. Or I can hear people having private personal conversations. I'm eavesdropping on private personal conversations with something that's going on at the front desk. I see all of that as a consultant. The dentist usually can't see or smell or experience any of that because they're focused on other things. They blocked it out. The brain is like that. The brain is lazy. It only pays attention to things that are relevant right now. So sometimes you need help with somebody who's never been there, that understands this game, to just look at everything and just have a conversation with you about, hey, did you notice that the sign outside your front door is the screw is loose and it's like turned down and there's cobwebs in there? Did you know that? No, I never saw that. Or did you know that, you know, if you just look behind that fake plant in your waiting room, there's a bunch of dead bugs back there. Did you know that? No, they never go there because they're just trying to deal with the crisis of the moment.
The picture on your website is not loading, or the page is broken when someone tries to click on it. All of those things. That collective.
So your brand image, as long as we're kind of talking about marketing here, your brand image is an assumption that's creating an expectation. All right. And that expectation will either be supported in advanced or it will be undercut. And so it is the experience, is every touch point congruent with the image you're projecting, all these beautiful pictures on your website and your whatever you say about all the amazing things that you can do? Is that what the experience is when they come in the door or even drive in the parking lot? Is that what they were expecting to see? Is the tone and temperament of the person answering the phone, is that what they were expecting to hear? Was the interaction what they'd hoped for all the way down the line? Was the process as gentle and safe feeling and supportive and productive as they'd hoped it would be? Or were you behind schedule? Felt rushed. They didn't feel like they were heard that day. Felt like they kind of got hurt when you were giving them the injections because you were in a hurry and behind schedule. All those things, you know, build towards building your brand in the direction that you want or undercutting it and creating a brand image that you're not even aware of as the dentist.
Mm. So it all fits together.
It all fits together.
Doc, of course, you're busy with your own exciting things. What do you have that you can share today that if people want to learn more, how they can do that?
Well, the very first thing that a dentist needs to be able to do if they want to move in this direction, they've got to have a vision of what it is they're trying to create. And for me, 30 plus years ago, I wrote down about 250 things about what I wanted my future to be like, what I wanted to be able to do, the kind of facility that I wanted to have, the kind of team that I wanted around me, the kind of skill set that I needed to have to do that, the places I wanted to study to be able to develop that skill set. And I literally created a vision in my mind of almost exactly the building and the facility that I live in and work in every day. I have a teaching facility downstairs. I have office layouts exactly the way, everything is exactly the way I like it and the way I want it. So imagine if you could design everything the way you want it, how much better you would feel about going to work every day. If everybody that worked at your office was people that you like to be around and that you like to help and like to develop. And imagine if almost every single patient that came in the door every day was somebody you really liked and looked forward to seeing and talking to them and learning a little bit more about what's happening with them, and then trying to figure out if there's some way that you can help them. Imagine that life. It's got to get very specific and clear. And then you've got to pursue your personal development wherever you are. Everybody's starting in a different place on both the clinical and behavioral and even financial level. Some people aren't at a place where they can take a lot of financial risks. Other people are pretty stable there, but a lot of other things aren't the way they want them to be. So it's a very personalized journey, just the way it is with each one of your patients. So there's a lot of self-development involved in that. As far as, you know, if you want some sort of support and reinforcement for that, I've got a Facebook page, the Bob Barkley Study Club Facebook page. Just join that. Every day I'll write about this or that, or give, you know, inspirational quotes that support this mindset, right? And then this fall in October 17th and 18th, we're having a workshop here. It'd actually be in this room I'm sitting in right now. This is a gourmet kitchen behind me that I designed, but in front of me, the part that you can't see is a space where we can have about 40 people and do workshops that's open to the mountains. So all of this was in my mind, was to build a teaching facility, both at my home, which I'm at right now, and my office. And we could move around. If I needed to do clinical things, I could do it at the office to teach. If I needed to do more workshop-y interpersonal things, we could do it here. That's what we're going to do
this
fall.
Sorry, Doc, in what city are you, so the listeners just know what city you're in?
Where I'm sitting right now is actually in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, but my office is down the mountain in Roanoke, Virginia, which is 30 minutes from here. So we're going to do 2 days on basically focused on co-discovery and how to develop all these things we've been talking about. How do we develop relationships with people? And this particular workshop is going to be focused on team members. So team members are invited to join us and understand their key role, because sometimes the touch point is in their room, in the hygienist room, when the person finally is paying attention and asking a really important question that allows you to dive deeper and explore values and motivations. And we're going to kind of work with team members on that kind of thing, all these aspects on how to build trust and collaborative relationships and so forth. So I'm doing that in conjunction with Janice Duprate, who has been doing this for 30 years. So a lot of veteran experience at this with a lot of practices. So that's what we're going to be doing next. And the Facebook page will announce these things as they come up.
The work that you're doing and everything you're saying, fantastic. Thank you. And it was an absolute privilege to speak with you today.
Well, thank you very much. This has been fun. And people have any questions, feel free to email me. They can reach me at paul@paulhennydds.com. That's paulhennydds.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.